I guess the only person in the audience that have heard some version of this is Alex, so I'll try to be, sorry, I apologize to him, but I'll try to be a little bit comprehensive. So the topic is really, so towards emphasis, emphasis should be on towards. So this is on one small step towards trying to understand how holography of higher spin gravity works with interactive field theory. And I will try to make this very precise. So as I said, there are a few loose ends, but I think that the ideas in this story are going to come together soon. So most of what I'm going to say is doing work with Chong Peng, a graduating student from Michigan. And then, but for about a year, we have been thinking with Rob and George, who are here, and Diana, and Omkar, who's a student of Rob, about these issues, and we have some ideas that hopefully will come out maybe within a month or two. Okay. So the outline of my talk, I first want to remind you of a very inspiring tale that we have, which is the duality between St. Gordon and the massive theory model. Then I'm going to talk, briefly mention some attempts at proving duality, some of the programs that are out there that people are pursuing. Then I'll talk about the main ingredient that I'm going to be using, which is the sacred normalization group equation, which is a reformulation of Wilson ideas by Polchinski. Then I'll talk about or review very briefly one of the key works in this program, which is the work of Douglas, Matsukato, and Razamat, where they show how to go from the SAC RG of a free vector model to some sort of higher spin. So here in parentheses I write that it's not Vasiliev. And I will also go back to this as we move on. So my main contribution, or what I'm going to talk about this stuff, is how we, in collaboration with Chong Peng, we improve a little bit this picture by considering also multiple trace deformations in the higher spin, in the vector model side, and how we map that into a multi-particle high spin algebra of the higher spin theory. So that's our main contribution, the key thing that we have obtained. But of course, to get here, I'll have to give you some background. Then I will conclude and I'll mention some other topics. So as I said, the nature of the talk is unfortunately very technical, but I will try to, if you have questions, I will try to highlight the key conceptual point of each of the calculations. But again, if you feel you're getting lost in the question, just ask me, okay, about what you think I was trying to do or what was the goal of doing that calculation. Okay, so here's the quantum St. Gordon model is dual to the massive theory model, and this is work by Sidney Coleman, 1975. So here is the St. Gordon model, and this is the theory model. So I quoted directly from the abstract because I think it's nice to remember the language that was used back in the 70s about the type of interaction and renormalizability. So these were really key ingredients at the time. So this is, of course, it was proved perturbatively, first by Sidney Coleman. It was proved perturbatively order by order in perturbation theory, and then the statement of the paper was essentially that these two perturbation theories are one-to-one under some identifications, which I highlighted. And again, there is still an interesting story with the phase diagram, and one surprise there, which was more or less understood or hinted at before, but not completely understood, is that the same St. Gordon solidon was identified as the fundamental field. So you have this kind of duality, which is a little bit non-local. So let's compare with the situation that we have now a little bit. So the situation there were some keys and some ideas, mostly by Sperm. We understood that the perturbation of the excitation of the solidons are kind of like fermions. And then after Sidney Coleman, Mandelstam understood how to consistently include solidons. After that, we had the development of non-abelian bosonization, which extended the story of U1 to any non-abelian group, and that was due to Widen, but also Polyakov and Wittmann understood that. And we have even a better understanding of what is going on in terms of current algorithms. So we see that all the factorization and all the key structures of the equation of motions that were understood are better organized in the language of these infinite dimensional algebras. In this case, that's Modiano. And of course, the Fermi field is a complicated non-local expression of the Fermi. So of the scale. So I think that this is somehow a paradigm that we would like to emulate, if possible, in the ADS-CFT. So in fact, I wanted to highlight that we don't talk anymore about the duality between Stein-Gordon and the theorem model. We essentially call it a bosonization, because it became a tool that we use. So if you have a hard problem with many fermions, so you just bosonize, do your calculation, and you're done. And there's no longer any mystery. And this, I think, is somehow the picture that we would like to have eventually for the ADS-CFT correspondence. So there have been some attempts, and I, of course, probably miss a few people here, but there have been some attempts at trying to establish the ADS-CFT correspondence more formally. So one is due to Rajesh Kupakumar, who tried to construct kind of a Hof looking at the perturbation theory of free fields and tried to understand ADS. There's another interesting program that was put forward by Berkowitz, where you're trying to look at the, so it's a little bit similar to Waffa's ideas of open-close duality, but in this case, it's in the context of ADS-CFT. Then there's Yevisky, who has a bilocal model for understanding higher spin gravity. This is many papers since 2003, but the paper and the idea of all this that I would like to emphasize today is this paper by Douglas Matsugata Rasamat, whose starting point was the renormalization group equation in the field theory, and tried to map that into a higher spin equation. Okay, so what are the key ingredients that we want to take from ADS-CFT that we would like to make precise? So, of course, here it would be nice, I guess, to have a long discussion about what it means to prove something like ADS-CFT. Maybe it doesn't even make a lot of sense to try to prove it because the two sides are not completely well defined mathematically. But my goal is to take one or the idea that I have, that I think most of the people who are trying to attack this problem in have, is to let's take one fundamental property of the field theory, let's say in particular the renormalization group equation, and let's see if we can map that into one defining property of the gravity sign. In the case of higher spin, if you can map that to the equation of motion, then we would call that kind of a proof. Okay, so that's, and what are the ingredients that I have to likely take into consideration? Well, we have the main statement, the string partition function gives you the quantum field theory partition function, or to fix some boundary conditions. We have a good idea intuitively that scale invariants have to do something with the geometry of the space, so ADS is a space that preserves, that has these symmetries. And then we have a lot of evidence that there's a UVIR relation. Suskind was one of the first people mentioning, but essentially that this radial direction works as a cutoff. And this idea, this intuition, has been made, of course, very precise in the context of holographic renormalization, where you use honest regularization and then you define complex terms and endpoint functions, and this is a fairly well established field. So these are some of the ingredients that we would like to keep into consideration. So definition, symmetries, and the role of the path. Okay, so before, just to clarify the framework, I want to remind you that there's this set of dualities that is due to Plerov and Polyakov, and also Sestine and Suslin and Sandel, that connects. So the statement of the duality is exactly as stated here. So I will concentrate only on the first part. So Vasiliev type A minimum bosonic theory on ADS-4, so this is a higher spin theory, is holographically dual to the free OM1. And then there are other conjectures. They are all connected, but there are other conjectures for the critical OM model and then for the Drosnyi-Bohm model, etc. But the key thing is this, that you have some higher spin theory, and that defined on ADS-4, and that is dual to the OM1 model. So I would like to emphasize, and I did that at the beginning, that the road we're pursuing is some almost parallel to this. So it could be that they are connected, but right now we don't see that yet. Okay, what we see is that there is a way to connect OM with some other higher string theory, and then whether that theory is connected to what's here or not is still a question that we're trying to clarify. But within this context, there are some well-defined dualities. Okay, so what kind of duality, which is important to highlight? So we are very used to using supergravity, to using a particular limit of the strong form of the duality, but this limit is really, in a sense, it's a little less intuitive, because here what you take is alpha prime instead of alpha prime to zero, and leaving with supergravity approximation, you take alpha prime to infinity, and then what you have, presumably, is a collection of all higher spin theories. So this is a very complicated limit, at least for our intuition in the field theory side. So the gravity side, which should be the string theory, this limit is of course in a very highly quantum state.
This is just the zero coupling in the domain.
Yes. Right? Yes. So, just I don't know if you're referring to this. For n equal 4, there's also a separate story where if you take the zero coupling limit of n equal 4, then you have infinitely many modes of current. And in that context, people try to connect to higher spin on maybe as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. But here I'm just, I mean, this is a more general topic. So here I'm talking, so more generically, AB is 4, AB is 5. So yes, the gravity side is complicated, but of course, or the light or the hope is that, of course, the field theory is free, at least in the case that I just mentioned. So there you understand a lot about the Gaussian fixed point, and you can try to take advantage of the structure of field theory near a Gaussian fixed point to understand something about this very non-trivial limit. So this is my one of the key ingredients of the story that I'm pursuing is the exact renormalization group equation. So this is, as I said before, this is essentially a statement of Wilson, but written in a way, re-examined by Kuczynski, and now it goes down to an equation that I will describe. So first of all, this is an unperturbative approach to renormalization group, but we do not need necessarily to have an expansion in diagrams or assume that there is a coupling that is small or anything like that. So all you need is a separation of your action into a kinetic part and an interacting part. And then you have to define a cutoff function k that depends on the cutoff. And then it's a function generically that vanishes for high momentum and then goes to one for low momentum. So this is how you achieve this separation of scale in this theory. But of course, this should be, the partition function should be independent on how you choose this cutoff, and demanding that the partition function is independent of the choice of this cutoff leads you to an equation for the interaction part. Okay. This is the exact RG equation. So normally there is not, you know, we do not have this one here, but I am introducing. So as you see, this does almost nothing. So having one here, there are no fields, so therefore it's just some renormalization of what I mean. By interaction, but it's not fundamental. So in most books, you will see these two terms. So this, of course, is a little bit formal, so let's try to understand what's going on in this way of thinking of RG. So in this way of thinking of RG, let's see what happens diagrammatically. So in the equation that I showed you before, there are two terms, okay? And what you have, so this term, and then of course, there are two terms, sorry, and then there's this integration, some convolution over the propagator. So what is going on is that, for example, this term is times the integration over the propagator, essentially can turn this three-point interaction into a four-point interaction. So you have contribution to your four-point interaction coming from the three-point interaction, defined by the equation that I wrote before, but you also have contribution, so this is a six-point, and here's the propagator that we have in the equation, it goes down to a four-point. So the four-point equation, or the four-point vertex, if you want to organize it like this, gets contribution from three-point and six-point interactions. And so with this diagrammatic approach, what you see is that the sidecar keys is not prohibitive in the sense that it doesn't use a coupling constant, but it is an organization of the RG in terms of vertices, and which vertices can contribute to interaction in other vertices. So that, I think, more or less clarifies what's going on. And that would be, of course, what we need to do. So this is the guiding principle that we'll be following. Okay. So now we're going to do something that was also mentioned in DMR, Douglas Matsugata Razamat, but I want to make it very precise. So the same way that we took this cutoff function and make it depending on the cutoff lambda, I can also make it depend on some fixed point, which is this vector e here. So of course, so this I'm going to do because I have some secret GR motivation to do this. Okay. I want to at the end have I have to orientize my concept of RG. So if ultimately I want to connect the RG equation to some kind of gravity equation, and gravity by definition is covariant, so I need to understand, or at least to push in the direction of covariantizing the RG equation. One way of covariantizing is to make sure that your partition function is independent not only of the cutoff, but of some, let's say, fiducial center that you can put in your coordinate system. And it leads you to essentially the same equations. Now, I want to emphasize, and I will show you that, of course, this is an overkill, because as I said, I have this agenda of obtaining a covariant RG, but it makes sense. And in fact, this equation, I will write it down for a given interaction, this equation is very easily satisfied when we do RG. When we do RG, essentially, and this is this comment here, not, right now it's a little cryptic, but I will make it very precise. When we write the interactions in free theory, we always demand that the vertex contain a delta function of momentum conservation, and that is precisely satisfied. That is equivalent, of course, being independent of translation, and that is the way that we satisfy this equation. I will explain that in the next few slides, but I want to make sure that this co-orientization of RG you can achieve by just introducing an extra point of and making sure that the partition function is independent of that. Usually we don't do it. We solve this equation by introducing a delta function, but you are allowed to do it. And if you do it, then you have a more covariant picture because you have this equation together with this other equation. And now you can think of this in a slightly more covariant way as having a differential that acts on this aspect.
So what sorts of couplings are present in your interaction?
Okay, I'll go now into a concrete example.
So we have, our field theory still lives in flat space, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And we have Wilson-Polchinski's equation.
Yes.
And then there's this equation.
Yes.
I just didn't quite get, what is this point? It's a point in space that does what?
So there are different ways to understand this, but I'm going to, the same way that I chose a scale here, I can choose some point or some origin, and then I can look at, I have to make sure that my partition function is, let's say, if I want to be translational invariant, okay, it will lead to some equation like this. Okay, so here's the application to the free vector model. So you take M free complex scalar, complex is the simpler, and in momentum space this is your action. So this P is the kinetic part which has this cutoff function. Right now I'm just following, reviewing a little bit the work. So this interaction was taken to be bilocal, and the motivation is that this kind of coupling is this bilocal coupling is the generating function, if you wish, of all the higher spin currents. And that's sort of the number one thing that you want to capture. But you would call in the sidecar G language, this would be your interaction. So when you apply the sidecar G equation to this interactive piece, this is essentially what you get. Okay, and you can rewrite it. This is now rewriting. So this is the equation. Okay, just apply. So you can see that because you have only quadratic piece, there is no, well, the other term that could be proportional here, the one proportional to two derivative is some constant, but I chose the one to give that constant. So essentially this is the equation that you have for that coupling. You can rewrite it, well, okay, so this is now definition. And here I'm moving from one sort of from one type of basis. I'm explaining or rephrasing this coupling in some other kind of variables, if you wish. But it's an expansion in polynomials of momentum, formal expansion. So this is the form of the sector of the equation right now. And the first term contains dynamic information in the sense of how you chose your cutoff. But this is essentially a scaling, so it tells you how roughly the naive scaling of this. So let's say, So I have the parable this one information. So so what I show you here is a little bit maybe convoluted. So but let's just try to have a cartoon of what happened. So what happened is that we have an equation for the coupling. This is the Pochinsky equation. I just wrote it in a way that suggests. So this dot is now this convolution, this integral. Okay, so I wrote it here. And then this is the equation. And then I went from some basis in which I have momentum, p and q, to some basis in which I have some form of variables, s and t, but this is just an expansion. And I did that for the two ingredients that I did. Okay? So this is what we take from the sector here. And now I ask, so where is the geometry hiding here? How can I possibly geometrize this story? And now I can see, so the first equation, d of some object equals the object dot the object itself, looks a lot like a flat connection equation. So that's giving me some hope that yes, you have some geometry, you have some flat connection. Okay, something interesting is already happening at this level. But moreover, you also have this dot, which was convolution. And of course, we have an expert in the audience, but if you have seen star products, then there's of course an integral representation. We usually like the differential representation. But now you can see, okay, this looks a lot like the star product. It's just that it's written in the integral form. But this is what we can take from this equation. The RG equation already contains a lot of geometry. It contains the star product in some very explicit way, and it contains also the geometrical structure of the flat connection. And all the program is to try to make this completely precise. Do precisely for the free theory and then try to see what happens if you can include certain interactions. So again, if anything, because as I said, it's a little technical, and most of the talk and most of the main statements are really technical in nature, but I think that conceptually, this is the story. So we have to rewrite RG, so here's the RG, but we have to rewrite it in a way that allows to understand what is the geometric structure behind it and try to flesh that out as much as possible. Good. So let's talk now a little bit about this E variation, the variation with respect to this point. So when I so here I didn't even go to the new basis, but essentially, so here's the equation, again there's no the other term is not present because I only have quadratic fields. So this is the equation and here is the equation rewritten in this new basis. So what this equation tells me is that this was the derivative of this cutoff function, roughly. Derivative of the cutoff divided by the cutoff. So if the cutoff is independent of this point, okay, as we do in Peschke-Schroeder, and the interaction is also independent of the point, as we do in Peschke-Schroeder, then all I have is momentum conservation, which is what we know. But what happens is that in Peschke-Schroeder, for example, what we do is that in any vertex, we impose directly the momentum conservation in the vertex. And then we don't worry about this equation. But we could say, more generally, this equation is there. It's just that we can solve it trivially. We can trivially solve it by sticking a delta function in any vertex. But this structure, if you want to dig it, is there. Okay, in the partition function. Okay, and all I'm doing to try to covariantize this story is to put this on equal footing with the variation with respect to the cutoff. That's all. Only that, of course, here it's a little, it's complicated because the naive scaling will change as we change. We know the story of RG, and here I can solve it trivial. I make everything independent of this point, and then I said, okay, here there's momentum concentration and vertex. Okay, so now let me mention, now we want to move and connect. So I said, again, we know what we want to connect, the structure of RG, we want to connect it with higher spin. So let me give you a very brief tutorial on higher spin. I apologize for people in the audience who know this story very well. So the key proposition of higher spin is, let's look at gravity not in the second order formalism where we have a metric, etc., but in the first order formalism where we have field bind and spin connection. So if you do it this way, so usually you require no torsion momentum compatible connection. That's this equation, the Kahn equation, also called. And this is the curvature of the spin connection. And from here, you get more or less the dynamics that you're looking for. Okay? So this is the way that we do it in first order gravity. So now, let's do this in a little bit more formal. So now I'm going to write it in, this is momentum generator, and this is, of course, Lorentz generator. So I can write a formal expression like this where I sum it. This is more a lot. McDowell-Mansouri, I will get here. But if I do it like this, then I can, for this connection, discuss the question of flatness of this connection. And there's a part that is proportional to this, to the momentum generator, and it's this part, and this, the part proportional to the translation generator, is this piece. Okay? So now that we have seen that there is no reason for us just to stay with these two generators, the story of higher spin theory is, instead of taking just these two generators and consider Poincaré, why don't you consider this higher spin algebra that contains the Poincaré group or the conformance group if you're interested in conformance. But it's just this step. So instead of limiting myself to a few generators, I'm going to consider an infinite dimensional self-generator. Of course, when I have my generators, we know the commutation relation here, so I don't even write it. But here, I have to tell you what is the commutation relation, and the best way to do that is through a stock product. Okay? That's just the nature of the story there. And then the story, the dynamics of my equation will come from the Mandel flat connection, as it comes here. But the flat connection now is written in a way where I also have to consider this stock product. To look at this scenario. And then the content, as we do here in the simplest case, is just to look at the coefficient of all these generators that are part of my algebra. That's all. Of course, what I said here is a very simplified version. This original story, if you want to do it in ADS, it's better to go to a dimensional higher because there the algebra is realized linearly. So there are many subtleties and they have all been worked out. So originally, McDowell-Mansouri put this in a very nice way. So how do you get more dynamic than just reaching flatness? If you want to contain ABS, what do you have to do? So all these questions have been answered already. I don't want to bore you with that. So it's Stelle West. And there is a beautiful also geometrical structure at this level that has to do with some Cossack group and the corresponding connection. So work that I'm doing now with Rob and George and company is essentially trying to formalize how the RG can connect to this picture. So that's one of the things that we're trying to do there. But okay, so here's the star product. Again, I will not slow down a lot. I mean, I will not put a lot of emphasis on the algebra at the right part. So now let me introduce the DMR highest spin system. So this is a different from Vasilev at the moment. The question of whether they are isomorphic or not, I have not been able to answer yet. But what is the context? So I have these master fields. So master fields, as I explained to you here, are these formal infinite dimensional expressions in the generators of your algebra. So I have, this is one, V W tilde. These are my equation of motion, flatness of the corresponding connection. And this is kind of transforming as an adjoint, but it's twisted adjoint in the case of Vasilev. Here it's not completely clear whether it's twisted adjoint because these two are not connected by an endomorphism. That's technicality. So here my equation, here my Gish transformation. So this is my system. This is a system of higher spin. It is consistent. You can check that taking one equation and ambient identity leads to the other equation. So all these tests are understood. Okay, I will not talk about Vasiliev, unless somebody really wants to get into that. I just wanted to some thoughts people like to say, how is that? Anyway, so now what I'm going to do is to remind you that ADS, of course, in this language, ADS, this is the connection as we usually write it for Poincaré, but you can also write it thinking of, so here I have already introduced an extra variable to make it more or less linearly realized. So these are the momentum generators. The connection of ADS with the right stuff product, of course, satisfies this equation. And what we have to do now to connect the RG to the master field that I have just defined is to understand these maps. So this map we already did, it was just an expansion in a different basis. And now with this as seeds, so RG give you some equations on this variable, but the interaction and the cutoff function, roughly. I put them in some other bases, and now I have to use these bases to generate solutions to my higher spin equation. That's all. And this is the map, this is the equation. This is the map. Yeah, as I said, it's a little bit obtuse, but you know, if you don't want to bore yourself with all the details of this vector twisters, etc., the key thing is that this is the chain that I follow. So RG gave me these equations or equations of these functions. These equations I can write in these bases, and I use these bases to define some master fields. So master fields are, as I just explained, some infinite sum in the generator. The generators of my higher spin algebra are this y, z, and then this, the lowercase z and z dot are special because they generate the ADS subalgebra of the higher spin. So with this, I can now define my master field. So this is the connection in ADS4 plus this small piece small variation that I define like this. And this one is on touch. Now with that, I put these ansatz in my equation. The equation for the field B, the others are more or less straightforward. The equation for the field B is the one that is non-trivial. Again, here B and W are master fields. So this expansion, and this is the start. Problem there. So when I plot the answer that I presented to you in this equation, this is what I get, which is the RG equation if I take R to be 1 over lambda. So I can go into more details, but what I have shown to you here is that a solution of exact RG provides a solution of the higher spin. That's what this part is. Okay, so let me summarize. So again, I use this particular interaction and then of course some auxiliary fields to map a field theory quantity. This was just changing basis, but I took this field theory quantity in this basis and generate a master field that satisfied the DMR higher spin equation. And again, this is this was for the single trace conserved currents. Okay? So now what I want to do is to try to, so what I want to do now is to include interactions in this picture. Okay, so I want to emphasize that, so formally I have not shown that these two things are completely equivalent. As I said, I want to say very carefully. So what I have shown is that a solution of the Sackler key equation provides a solution to the higher spin equation through the maps that I have constructed. That's a little less than saying that the two equations are one to one, but I think it's the same. So let's talk about interactions now. So this is the action that we had before.
Just can I?
Yes.
Can you motivate that? I mean, intuitively, I don't know. Somehow, when I think higher spin, I think, there will be huge spaces of solution, completely incomprehensible to me anyway. But you want to say, you would like to say that every solution of your higher spin equations is going to be a solution of the exact RG. Is that not the missing step?
Right, so that I cannot say.
But can you motivate why you might think that to be true, or do you have some intuition working?
No, I mean, I don't have a deep intuition. I'm just limited technically, so I don't see necessarily Okay, so I have some explanation that has to do with the, okay, so here's my explanation, which is also a little bit deficient. So going from a sector RG to higher spin is possible because a sector G, so remember that we have in ADS-EFT these local symmetries in the boundary versus, global symmetries versus local symmetries. So it is hard to start from the boundary, which has information about some global symmetry, then I try to get something that might be a gauge symmetry in the ball. And because of that, I think that there's inherently some difficulty going the other way. So you can always, if I give you a solution in the boundary, then you roughly know what to do, which it already chooses for you some gauge. Okay? But going the other way around requires either you go over and touch what you have in the ball, or something else has to be clarified. So that's sort of my understanding why, and I want to just make sure that I don't overclaim what I'm trying to do. So what I have done is I took a solution and I show how I embed that solution into the higher spin equation. But going back, I think it's a lot harder. So now I want to introduce an interaction. So basically, again, this is, so number one, single sector. Okay, so when I state the higher spin duality, I have to emphasize that it's in the single sector. So, and that's what I have, AK. So this thing has to be singlet, and then I can have N of them. And this coupling I will call BN. So these are my couplings in the theory. This kind of coupling. And I, so these are my coupling. Nothing fundamentally changes it, and now I have this expression. And I can write the sector G for this coupling. The sector G for this coupling is going to be given by this. It's just plug and get the expression. It's just been this kind of graph. Where of course here you have many places where you can put the R, so the convolution bar, okay, and then you have to sum over all possible ways to put it in P and all possible ways to put it in Q and all possible ways to put it in R. That's all. So in order not to make it dizzy with notation, the sector G equation for this coupling is essentially like this. So the lambda of Bn, and then Bn convoluted with Bs with some symmetric structure. That's the one that I want to consider. Okay, just one interaction. So I think I'll have enough time to build up. So at the end of my claim will be a little bit bigger than just one single interaction, but this one, to handle this one is, and convince you that I understand what to do, is already challenging. So let's take this simple one. Solve it, and then I will tell you how to get our
answer. So what is B of P in this case? Is this a,
sorry?
What is B of the P and Q's?
So it's a coupling.
You said that already.
Right. Yeah, it's just a coupling. The same
it's
way that first I had this just B1, P and Q, and now I'm going to call it N because I have NP and Q.
Okay,
so let me make a big disclaimer. So, And I will explain, and I think this is really the main shortcoming of my work so far, is that I am not able to do this for the relevant deformation, for B2, where I have 5-5. And I will explain why that doesn't work. And that really is a shortcoming. I want to make sure that I also say that. But anyway, so let's see what happens when I have some N. This is a schematic of my sector G equation. Again, now you roughly know the algorithm. So from this coupling, I define this is just a coordinate change. So I go to this VSP, and I also do the same for the color function alpha. And then here's how I write the sector G equation. This is similar to what we did before. What we would call the kinetic part, the ADS kinetic part, and the more dynamic part. So that's sort of like a field theory answer. So if you want to have this coupling, then this coupling will run according to this equation. And my goal is to put this in the higher spin. But to get it into higher spin, I have to talk a little bit about what multi-particle higher spin algorithm, okay? Which is really the missing ingredient that I think was not there for DMR to make it this way. So if I have some algebra A, I can of course construct the multi-particle higher spin algebra. So this construction, by the way, this construction is due to Basilev. Obviously, this construction is a mathematical construction that people have discussed, but he was the first to put it in the higher spin language. Of course, as I have to say again, the higher spin algebra that we're discussing, higher spin theory, is not positive, but this construction doesn't care about which algebra you're using. So let's say that this is A is the DMR algebra for one higher spin. This is the basically the definition of your multi-particle algebra on an algebra A. And what you have to tell me essentially, so this is symmetric product, so you have to choose a multiplication rule for different elements. So this A, let's say that, so there's an element here, AI, and these are the generators that define it, and I'm going to have a rule, if they are in the same copy, then I multiply them according to the algebra that we had before, and if they are not, then they completely don't know about each other, which is what this is. Okay, so the multi-particle algebra can be written more formally as a subalgebra of enveloping algebra of the particles, and then this permutation that I discussed. Okay, and again, this was originally constructed for the higher spin algebra of Basile, but this is, as you see, there is nothing here that tells me this is only applicable to particles. So what I'm going to do, as I said, my key thing is that I need to now understand how to map these interactions to the higher spin master fields. But well, they are master fields in this multi-particle algebra, multi-particle construction on the higher spin algebra. So I'm going to introduce, so this is similar to the dressing that I introduced before. It's a formal thing, but it's very, so this is just technically, you have to technically choose this kind of combination, and it has to do with properties of the client. So there you have to get a little bit heavier into the definition of higher spin algebra. So assume, and let's say that I have this field that I organize for each copy, okay? And then I'm going to have P and Q, these are momenta, I'm going to map to some vector variables that are the generators of the higher spin algebra, and I'm going to construct my master field higher spin according to this procedure. So again, this is addressing, it's just organizing the elements of, so these are generators, these are the generators of the ABS bar. So it's just a matter of organizing algebraically the story. And then remembering that these objects live in different copies of the higher spin map. So if you do that, then here's my definition for the master field. So now for the copy B1, and the coupling Bn, I construct my master field according to this. The zero order still is many copies of the ABS connection. This is the zero for you, and this is my answer for the master field. This one gets shifted by this piece, and here I have to sum over all the particles in the interaction. Okay, now I have the answers. I can plug in the equation. Again, the main non-trivial equation is the equation for B. And the equation, again, this is just, it's very, very, I mean, it's complicated, okay, but it's straightforward. So I have to remember what the star product is, how to multiply different elements, which one commute, and they commute, or follow the rules, and then organize. And here's how I organize my answer. So there's one piece proportional to one of these generators, and then another piece that is proportional to this generator, of course, and then the third piece. So I know that this is hard to follow. So here's a schematic part. So I plug my answers in the higher spin equation for B, which was the key part, and there was one square bracket, this square bracket, is precisely the sector G for this coupling. There was another square bracket, this one here, and that is the sector G for the coupling Bn, and then there are terms that in the Laplacian limit go vanish. Okay? This is the structure that we have. So now what we can say is that, and also, again, my disclaimer that I was doing this for Bn irrelevant. Okay? I will talk about the relevant in a minute. For Bn irrelevant, then I guarantee that this of course, dies as n goes to the Laplacian limit. So, and of course, this is the equation for B. There's also some counts for the equation for the others. But the key thing, okay, so this is sort of the main story. If I use the higher spin, the multi-particle, because I need to use multi-particle, if I use the multi-particle higher spin algebra, I am able to also embed into solutions of the higher spin equation the exactor G for a system of the free vector model with a non with a relevant interaction. Okay? That's sort of the thing on this part, and it's just this in the Russian limit. That's what all we do. So now let's talk a little bit about the relevant. As I said, this is, in my opinion, the main shortcoming of this problem. So if I have now that you have seen enough of notation, I feel braver to write things like this. This is schematically exactly for one when you have five bar five, and this is for two. Okay. Now this is the structure, and these are these convolutions without. And now I did it a little bit more space. So if I have B2, this is the problem, this is really the key problem. So if I have B2, I lose a lot of what was my starting point for algebra. So if I have B2, then this is no longer a flat function. So that's one technical problem. But more importantly, I cannot make it go away in the Russian limit, because if you remember from the equation, this is the term that comes from differentiating twice the action with respect to fields. And then you have an integration. So there is a trace here. So even if this was 1 over n, when I look at the trace here, this n comes back, and it will be at the same level. So I cannot neglect a relevant, only if I don't have it. If I don't have it at the beginning, then I can organize my RG close to the Gaussian fixed point to flow just a little bit to make my statements correct. But as soon as I generate a V2, a relevant deformation, then this is no longer correct. And again, for some secret people who know well about the OM model, so the relevant deformation of the OM model is the one that can, is the one that takes it to the critical OM model, and it's usually handled through the gap equation. So it's a little subtle, but it can be done. So I'm hopeful that we can fix this understanding a little better, but it's not at this immediate level that I want to share that. So now that I explain how I can do one interaction, so here's how I do many interactions. So suppose I have now n greater or equal to 3 to avoid the relevant deformation, and I have a sum of interactions, always singlet, and I have up to n. Then essentially the exact RG schematically is going to be like this, and with an ansatz of this type, I can also arrive at a conclusion similar to what I applied before. So it is satisfied up to large n. So this is the general comments of the calculation. So now there's an interesting part that we are also trying to flesh out in more detail, which is that in the Russian limit, we are able to get the equations precisely, but if you are not in that precise limit, then you will have the equation is satisfied up to n, and this seems to match nicely with this work of Maldacena and Joael, where they showed that the structure when you have breaking of the hierarchy symbol. So I think that we have we're in a road to also connect with that structure. So to mimic not only when we have the solution, but when we do not have a precise map, how is the breaking happening? And we think it's along this line. Okay, so let me conclude saying that the key contribution of my work with Champagne was essentially to try to understand how the irrelevant deformation that I could write as multi-trace deformation in the vector model map to a multi-particle states in the ball. So this is, of course, if you say like this is, of course, we always knew this. In the ADS-CFT, we know, of course, that multi-trace deformation corresponds to multi-particle states. But now we have a very clean and fairly explicit realization using the multi-particle higher spin algorithm. Again, there's this structure, we have to make this clear, but that in the Russian limit, the extra terms that we have in the sector G are connected or seem to be in agreement with the fact that the vector model breaks the interaction break the higher spin symmetry, which is the statement of Maldacena by it. And more interestingly for us, this is an example of RG equals GR, where of course GR for us was this higher spin, but I think that this is a fundamental paradigm that we would like to one day get to the level that I said at the beginning we have for the bosonization. So one day we have a complicated problem in GR and we just use the field theory language to solve it, vice versa. I think that one important advantage of this construction, reason why I'm very excited about working on this is that it is constructive. Okay? So you start with some field theory and you study the exact idea of that field theory, and you have to work to make it into a higher spin equation of motion. But your starting point is there, which is not the case in a lot of dualities. In a lot of dualities, you start looking at the two sides and you realize that they have some symmetries, etc., and that makes you confident that there is a duality. But in this case, it's very constructive, and I think this is really one important advantage. Another important thing is that there is so we took a step, small, but nevertheless a step towards quantization of the Sagan-Gyu equation, which I think is really fundamental if you want to connect with the Hawaiian theory of gravity eventually. So we haven't thought a lot about that topic, and I think it's a topic worth discussing. And of course, this is sort of the central story that I'm following with George and Rob. So there are many open questions, of course, there are many open questions. So the first one, and the most obvious one, is are these two things isomorphic, the DMR higher spin and the Vasili higher spin? So if this is true, of course, this is equivalent to proving the vector model higher spin duality, because the higher spin duality was this is connected or dual to the ON, so now if these two things are connected, then you're done. Okay? So that is a very interesting problem, obviously, trying to work on this. Then there's this story with the Levitsky bilocal field approach to the ON that I think in the Sagan-Gyu you might have a cleaner way to look at it. There is, of course, that you could directly compute the three-point functions in DMR as John B and GED. That's the story. So what I've been saying about covariant version of RG is very similar to the proposal by Sun-Sik Lee about the quantum RG. So RG needs to be reformulated. I think that many people have come to that conclusion. And what Sun-Sik Lee's program, in my view, is also an attempt to make it directly. So start with RG and come to the conclusion that it is indeed a gravity. And then there are other questions that I think I will not go into, because if we can take a swing at these first three, four, that will be better. So thank you very much.
I guess we don't have a lot of time for questions because there's another talk at 11, right? But is there time for one more?
So, yes. Is it correct to say that this your construction, the Bohr theory is classical?
It is true. The Bohr theory is completely classical, yes. I only talk about equation of motions. It's completely classical. That's a big problem. That's
the field in the Bohr and the fields, the method of the field and the method of the particles are map place or they have map.
Are they sorry?
The field side and the higher spin theory,
yes.
They have a mass or both are massless. Just how they.
So no, they don't have mass, right? So
okay, so we map from B field to the higher spin field, right?
Yes.
And then the B field doesn't have mass, it's massless,
right.
And the higher spin.